So one thing that has always fascinated us as a group, I think, is the idea of secret armies. This was a big belief during the Cold War, the concept of something like a fifth column, so-called. We were digging in for years to find evidence of actual secret armies. And in this classic episode, spoiler alert, we find one. And it's incredibly disturbing.
It really is. I remember feeling uneasy and surprised after recording this initially. It's one of these things that once you learn it, it really does change the way you look at the world just a little bit, just enough of a bending of the lens that you've got in front of your eyes.
Indeed. So let's dive right in.
From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
And I am Ben. We're here with our super producer, Noel, put your foot down, Brown.
That's right. He's just one glass pane away. Or maybe it's two. I think it's double paned.
Yeah, yeah.
So, dude.
Yes, sir.
We're in this new office. It's pretty swank. It's pretty sweet. I'm loving it. I don't know about you. I think you're enjoying yourself here, right?
You know, it's a nice place.
You know, one of the things that is here is a fairly open break room area. That is between where you guys sit and where, when I say you guys, I mean writers, editors, podcasters.
Oh, that stings, Matt.
You guys are all over there. And then all of the video team is back here in this kind of cordoned off dark room area.
Why don't you just say you people? Right?
That's okay.
That's totally what
you're
doing.
So you people are over there. And in between us is this no man's land with a giant question mark table and all of the coffee. And sometimes, I don't know if this happens to you, but when I'm over in that area, I will overhear something that maybe I wasn't supposed to hear. Because somebody will be having a conversation, but the office is so open that it's, you know, you just hear things. And it made me think about this week's topic. Just because sometimes there's information that people don't want you to hear, but we don't live in a vacuum.
Well, Matt, you're here. Noel's here. I'm here. Listeners, you're the most important part of the show. You're here. And I guess on behalf of the listeners, I'd have to ask, where are you going with this? What are you talking about?
So, Ben, what I'm talking about is a trial in an Italian court in 1984. There's this guy who's considered a right-wing terrorist named Vincenzo Vinciguerra.
Working for a right-wing terrorist group whose name translates to New Order.
Yes, precisely. Well, this group, he stated that his group participated in what they would say is a false flag terrorist attack. Several of them, which were meant to discredit communists in the region. Now, he also said, Ben, that these acts that they were taking part in, and his group, was a part of something called Operation Gladio.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the subject of our episode today, Operation Gladio. In this moment, in 1984, in this Italian court, when this guy, who is a terrorist, Vincenzo, when he says that his group was there to discredit the communists, that's because this was originally blamed by the mass media of the time and the government of the time on a group called the Red Brigades, which were supposed to be they were a communist affiliated group of activists. But he said not only did they do a false attack to discredit this communist group, which hadn't bombed anything, but they had bombed other things as well. And they did this on the orders of their leaders in Operation Gladio. And here's the weird thing. Their leaders, he alleges, are not, you know, ideological crazy skinheads or super fascist. They are someone higher, much, much more official. This makes a Venetian judge named Felice Casson very curious. He sees anomalies in the reporting of this case, which was, I believe originally was the Petrano bombing. So this Judge Felice, he goes to the archives of the Italian military secret service, where he discovers documents confirming the existence of Operation Gladio, forcing the prime minister at the time, Giulio Andreotti, to confirm the existence of this international program. This is the first time a government official has confirmed it. A lot of people think Operation Gladio went public in 1990, but that's not true. It's 84, as you said.
We keep saying the name Operation Gladio, and I'm sure our listeners are just going, what the hell is that? Well, here is the basic idea of what it is. It's a state-sponsored stay-behind program for armies, like these standing stay-behind armies for places in mostly Western Europe after World War II, in order to basically stamp out, in a lot of these places, to, act and do things that armies and official, you know, military could not do. And a lot of the times they were really bad things, like we said, carrying out terrorist attacks. And these groups were sponsored through Gladio by intelligence agencies and even NATO.
Right. One important distinction for us to make here is that when these stay behind armies were started, we'll walk through the timeline here. When these stay behind armies were created, their purpose was not to do offensive actions, you know, like to perform operations. Their purpose, what it was, you know, if they were a box of cereal, what it said on the box exactly was that they would be waiting in secret in the event of an invasion from the communist side
or an uprising of some sort, basically an emergency situation thing.
Right. Specifically, though, not an emergency situation like an earthquake or something but an emergency situation defined specifically by communist powers from the USSR attempting to invade, you know, like other West Germany, other countries that were on the border. So these guys originally weren't supposed to do anything but wait, because at the time, Western Europe and the United States were convinced that World War III was going to happen very soon, and it would be between capitalism and communism. So they all got together in secret and built these invisible armies for this coming secret war in countries just throughout the area, part of countries that were part of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and countries that were not. We have a list of them too, right?
Yeah, let's just go through, Ben. Now, Finland.
Oh, Sweden.
Italy,
Spain,
Germany,
Austria,
Switzerland,
France,
Belgium,
Denmark,
Greece,
Luxembourg,
Norway,
Portugal,
Turkey,
Cyprus,
and possibly even more.
I would say probably. We don't know. Yeah. So these groups that were hired, these were often like far right activists. So imagine separatist militias. Imagine, and this was the case in Germany, former SS soldiers.
Wow.
Yeah. They were supported by the local government, so there were no big arrests or prosecutions when things did start getting pear-shaped for a while.
Well, a lot of times they were dropped, right? Right. The charges against these groups were just dropped mysteriously, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they depended on secret caches of weapons that were distributed all over Europe. Like, think of finding an abandoned mine with just crate after crate of C4.
That's kind of crazy. It reminds me of some of the spy video games I've played where there's like a specifically Hitman where there's a weapon cache somewhere on the level. They just had to seek out and find it.
I played one. Hitman is the guy who's bald, right?
He's got the gloves. Agent 47.
I think I played one version of Hitman, and I quickly just got waxed because you're supposed to be sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get that at first.
Come on.
No, I ran through I was terrible at it.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad one of us is good at it. You're the expert on Hitman from now on.
Okay.
But here's the million-dollar question, right, Matt? Did Gladio armies ever cross the line from being a ready defense force to active domestic terrorism, which is not what they were supposed to be doing?
Well, you know, from the first thing we stated on this podcast, it seems like maybe they have, but let's learn more.
here's where it gets crazy. So to begin this story, we're going to have to start way back in time in 1940 when Prime Minister Winston Churchill creates the secret stay-behind army, the Special Operations Executive, to assist resistance movements and carry out subversive operations in enemy-held territory. Now, this, you'll notice, is a little bit different because this group he starts already is in enemy territory. Mm-hmm. It's not like a...
They're behind the lines already.
Right. Yeah, that's a great way to say it. They're behind the lines, so they are actively doing stuff. But at the end of World War II, when their new armies created, they're based off the experiences and strategies of this SOE group and their former officers, right? Mm-hmm. So if we fast forward, we see that there's already trouble brewing by the end of the war.
Yeah. Then in 1945 in Finland, the communist interior minister, he exposes a secret stay behind, which is currently at that time being closed down, which is interesting because that's one of the first times you hear, oh, wait, this guy is officially closing this secret thing that nobody knew about.
Right. Yeah. And some people say just like a communist. And just a few years later, in 1947, this is a big date for every U.S. resident and probably for most people in the world. Then President Harry Truman creates the National Security Council and the Central Intelligence Agency. They also have a special branch of the CIA at this time. It's called the Office of Policy Coordination. And that is what sets up these armies that stay behind in Western Europe, these invisible militias. And I just got to point out, Matt, regardless of how you feel about this policy, it's so strange that so many covert and technically, I guess, illegal things that governments do fall under such vague names.
Oh, absolutely. That sound nice. Like, that's okay.
Sure.
Office of Policy Coordination. That's really good. They're getting in between the different, you know, groups and they're just like, hey, this is the policy, guys.
Right. Yeah. What could go wrong?
Then in 1947 in France, the interior minister reveals the existence of another secret stay-behind army, codenamed Plan Bleu.
Right.
B-L-E-U.
Yes, yeah. So there's one then in France. There's something in Finland. In Austria, same year, 47, another stay-behind army is exposed, but this had been set up by right-wing extremists. And they were named Susek and Rosner, and a chancellor at the time named Korner pardons the accused under, say it with me, Matt,
mysterious circumstances. Oh, here you go. In 1949, a really important year, another one, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization is founded, and the European headquarters is officially established in France. That's NATO.
Yeah, NATO. That's the one that you hear of Vladimir Putin and Barack Obama name-dropping all the time, right? So in 1951, just a few years later, a CIA agent who may be familiar to some of you out there, named William Colby, is in Sweden training these stay-behind armies both that country, Sweden, and train a new one for Finland and in the NATO members, Norway and Denmark.
It's crazy.
It's proof that the CIA was involved
yep.
with this. Yeah.
In 1951. Then, next year, in 1952, in Germany, a former SS officer, Hans Otto, which you may have heard before, that name, he reveals to the criminal police in Frankfurt the existence of another, this time fascist German stay-behind army.
Hmm.
And the arrested right-wing extremists, guess what?
What?
They're found not guilty under mysterious circumstances.
Right. So we'll do this one more time, or maybe a couple more times. In Sweden, the police arrest a right-wing guy named Otto Hallberg in 1953, and that is how they discover the stay-behind army that is in Sweden. Hallberg walks away free because the charges against him are dropped under mysterious circumstances.
Man, these circumstances, they sure work in mysterious ways, don't they, Ben?
Right, yeah. You got it. So, okay, now we get to the point where it starts to seem as though these stay-behind armies might be doing more than protecting operatives, mm-hmm. right? But they might actually be affecting the government in which they reside.
In 1960, in Turkey, the military, supported by secret armies, they stage a coup d'etat and they kill Prime Minister Adnan Menderes.
Yeah, and so in 64, in Italy, the stay-behind army that Gladio instituted is involved in a coup with the Italian military. General Giovanni De Lorenzo in Operation Solo makes the socialist ministers of Italy leave the government. And they called it a silent coup. Just, I guess, a reorganization of power.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it was. And, the Office of Reorganizations of Power Structures.
Right, yeah.
So in 1969 in Italy, the Piazza Fontana massacre, which you may have heard of, it's in Milano. It kills 16, injures and maims 80. It's blamed on the left. Then, 30 years later, during a trial of right-wing extremists, General Giadelio Maletti, he's the former head of the Italian counterintelligence. Anyway, he claims that the massacre had been carried out by the Italian stay-behind army and right-wing terrorists on the orders of the U.S. Secret Service and Central Intelligence Agency. And they did it in order to discredit the Italian communists.
In Turkey in 71, there's another coup. The military takes power. These are where we see allegations that the stay-behind army from Gladio is waging domestic terror and killing civilians.
Next year, 1972, in Italy, a bomb explodes in a car near the village of Petiano, killing three police officers. The terror, this act, is first blamed on the left. Then it's later traced back to the right-wing terrorist Vincenzo Vinciguerra. Isn't that interesting?
Who we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, yeah.
And the Italian stay-behind, codenamed Gladio.
And this takes us, let's fast forward, because when he's finally in trial, 1984, as we mentioned, and he... Vinciguerra reveals the involvement of NATO stay-behind army and these acts of terrorism to discredit communists. He gets sentenced to life. Mm-hmm. Some would say that's clearly he did it. People think he did it. But other people were saying that he was not protected by the organization because he started talking about it.
Can't do that.
So 1990, he's a young magistrate judge at the time, Felice, as we mentioned earlier, Felice Casson, forces the prime minister to acknowledge the existence of Gladio, at least in Italy, but we start seeing, more mysterious stuff because once this watershed, you know, it's like a dam. Once there's a fracture or a leak in a dam, the entire structure begins to compromise.
Well, yeah, people start getting nervous about their own involvement.
Right.
And, you know, like where are the legal lines here? Mm-hmm. It's tough to know exactly where they are. So then in 1990 in Switzerland, a former commander of the Swiss secret stay-behind army P26, in a confidential letter to the Defense Department, declared that he's willing to reveal, quote, the whole truth, unquote. Thereafter, he's found at his house, stabbed with his own military bayonet.
So, let's go forward to later in the same year. In Belgium, NATO denies – now, NATO is based in Belgium. In Belgium, NATO denies these allegations of the Italian prime minister and this idea of secret war in Western Europe. The next day, though – right after that, so it's like November 5th, they say that. November 6th, they come back and they say, that denial had been false. We will not answer any further questions.
So, yeah. Hey, look, we lied to you, but we can't talk about it, okay?
Well, that's not saying we lied. That's just saying...
we were wrong?
Yeah, we were wrong. That's not accurate.
We didn't... maybe, yeah. We didn't have the information at the time. Now we do, but we still can't talk about it.
Sure.
And then lastly for this timeline, or we've got a couple more here, but in 1991 in the U.S., the National Security Archive at the George Washington University in Washington, they file an FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act request, concerning the secret stay-behind armies with the CIA in the interest. So they're going to the CIA trying to request these documents. And they're trying to get them with the interest of public information and scientific research. That's the reason they're trying to get them. Now, the CIA rejects the request with their standard reply that we've heard before in movies and in television, Ben. Quote, "The CIA can neither confirm nor deny the existence or non-existence of records responsive to your request." Gosh, that is so polite and just shadowy.
There was a great article about the man who originally made that statement. I can't remember if it pertained to JFK or something like that, but we'll find that out and we'll put it up on our social media if we haven't already. So go visit us at Facebook and Twitter, where we are Conspiracy Stuff.
It really is perfect language for not really saying anything, but very cordially.
Yeah, it reminds me of Joseph Heller in Catch-22. For anyone who's a fan of that book, there seems to be an inherent absurdity, but you got to check out that article we found, because that will explain in depth just how carefully worded that kind of stuff had to be. So we've got that timeline, and we see some trends in some of these cases. We see an initial act of terrorism, a furious sudden accusation of left-wing groups, and then later information seems to often reveal a connection between the state and these groups. So at this point, Matt, having looked over this timeline, and thank you for walking through that with us, listeners, at this point, we're seeing something that we see often when we talk about shadowy organizations or government operations, and that is that there's some stuff that is proven and is crazy and is illegal and is proven after the fact. And then there's a much larger category of stuff that's unproven but alleged. We're going to save that stuff for the end, of course, but we can start at least with the things that have already been proven.
Well, one thing that we do know is that these groups that are supported by Operation Gladio, they did, some of them at least, did commit some sort of acts of terror or terrorism.
Sure.
What we would call terrorism now in the 21st century.
A lot of bombings.
Yes, bombings in particular. They say that this was, at least these groups say it was on the order of NATO and or MI6 and or the CIA. But those organizations, they just straight out deny any of their involvement, and they prefer to paint the terror as acts of unilateral decisions made by these unrelated groups. And, you know, hey, look, guys, we had nothing to do with this.
Right. And in Italy, we know that, at least in Italy and probably in other places, these Gladio groups were associated with criminal elements or corruption or what is often called the deep state. Specifically, these guys are working with one of your favorite organizations, conspiracy-wise, which is a Masonic lodge, or arguably a pseudo-Masonic lodge, named Propaganda Du.
Yeah, that group is fascinating. I think we've briefly covered them a couple of times in video, but
yeah,
it is worth your time to do a little further research on P2. Propaganda Du.
Right. Yeah. They have they're often referred to as a state within a state or a shadow government. This is a strange thing to read about, especially if you are interested in corruption cases. They had journalists, members of parliament, the equivalent of the big businessmen, the military leaders. So think of it, if you're listening to this in the United States, think of this as a club where, Glenn Greenwald, Colin Powell, every president, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Oprah, everybody who has a lot of influence goes to hang out here. Kind of does Freemason stuff, which I guess would mean that they wouldn't have Oprah in that organization. But they, you know, they do Freemason stuff, and then they say, here's how we're secretly going to run the country.
Yeah.
And
I don't think
Glenn
Greenwald would be a part of that. I just have to believe that he would not be a part of that. I have to, Ben.
Well, I don't think that they're definitely not members of P2.
Yes, that's true.
Which was later supposedly disbanded. But now, so we have that stuff proven. Acts of terrorism, right? Possibly some other stuff, and cooperation with crime, cooperation with international intelligence networks. But we have a lot more unproven stuff. And one of them, I guess the one we can just jump into, is pretty frightening if it's true.
Yes, it's this thing called the strategy of tension, which is pretty interesting. And the idea here is that the constant terrorist attacks create this fear amongst the populace. It encourages this atmosphere in which there's hostility in the public against these left-wing groups. So basically what it will do is, or what they're hoping it will do, is create that tension so that the public in general will start clamoring for more control, more security from either the government or right-wing groups or both, and, you know, kind of give them even more power over the state in general and the economy.
Yeah, as the operative Vincenzo Venceguera said during that famous trial in 1984, you had to attack civilians, the people, women, children, innocent people, unknown people far removed from any political game. The reason was quite simple. They were supposed to force these people to turn to the state to ask for greater security.
Yeesh.
Right. And then there's more. That's one accusation, which is frightening if it's true. But then there's also these accusations or allegations of assassinations.
That's right. In 1978, there's an investigative journalist named Mino Pecorelli, and he thought that Prime Minister Aldo Moro's kidnapping and assassination by the Red Brigades had actually been masterminded by somebody else, by this what he called a lucid superpower. And he was inspired by the logic of Yalta, he thought the attack and assassination was inspired by the logic of Yalta.
And there was something that Aldo Moro was doing during that time, right before his kidnapping and assassination.
Yeah. He was looking into this thing and negotiating this thing called the Historic Compromise, which would have allowed the Communist Party for the first time since the expulsion in 1947 to re-enter the government. And that would have been a big change that a lot of people would not have liked to have seen.
So let me get this straight. And I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying it's been proven. But let me get the official story straight. So the guy who was making moves to get the Communist Party back into, you know, a legitimate party status was kidnapped and assassinated by communist activists.
That's the story.
Okay. Well, you know, at different time maybe. Also, NATO, you know, we talked about the possibility of these NATO-sanctioned coups when we're walking through the timeline, but let's get to perhaps the most important question that.
That's a huge thing.
What's that?
NATO-sanctioned coups.
Oh, yeah. Well, coups are a part of geopolitical
of policymaking
process
in the office. Yeah, totally.
And we had talked about the possibility that NATO had been sponsoring coups as well when we were walking through the timeline, right?
Yes. And, you know, I guess we kind of glazed over them as we're going through the timeline, but the idea of a coup d'etat in any country is a huge deal. And it's sponsored by anybody. It doesn't matter. That probably shouldn't happen. Even if there is a brutal dictator or something like that, creating a coup is a big deal no matter which side you lay on, right? If you think it's a good thing or a bad thing for a country as a whole.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like having a third party come through and influence a turnover of government, that's a big deal.
Well, yeah, and that's that. I'm glad you say it that way, Matt, because that's a big point. A lot of people who first hear of, you know, the founding of a nation or the change in the government can get misled when you read in a history book or something that the people decided to make a change.
Oh, sure.
Because as you look, often, not all the time, of course, but often these people or these internal groups that are leading the charge are being bankrolled or motivated by some third party, often another country. So, or
precisely,
somehow affiliated with it, sometimes just a large company. But yeah, so do be cautious when you hear that sort of stuff. Are we saying that there is hard proof that everyone admits that NATO, you know, orchestrated coups. We can't. No. We can't. The U.S. State Department certainly does not agree with that, or with most of the ideas about the Operation Gladio incidents. However, there's one really big one that I'm sure they would dismiss entirely as a conspiracy theory, and that is the last of the unproven allegations that we have to mention today, but chilling if they are true. And it comes to us from a lady named Sybil Edmonds, a former FBI translator turned whistleblower.
Yes. She alleges that Gladio continues today and that it's called a very similar named program, Gladio B.
Oh, okay. In a burst of creativity,
yes.
Right? So what this is, according to the account of Sybil Edmonds, is a cooperation or a cooperative enterprise between U.S. intelligence agencies, the Pentagon, and Al-Qaeda or other Mujahideen forces, to the point where they said that Ayman al-Zahawiri met with the members of U.S. intelligence at an embassy in Azerbaijan starting in 1997 and continuing all the way to 2001.
Now that is a tough piece of information. That isn't solid information. This is something that is alleged.
Sure, yeah, by Edmonds.
However, that is a tough piece of information to swallow for anybody who believes some of the theories specifically behind the attacks of September 11th.
Right, yeah.
And that isn't to say that, you know, I guess we just have to push pretty hard that those – I can't emphasize enough that this is alleged. However, it is alleged by somebody who was working from the FBI, who spoke a lot of different languages.
Yeah, fluent in four languages.
Yeah, and was paying attention to things. So – interesting.
One of which is Azerbaijani, just
exactly.
To be clear. So this idea that she's talking about in Gladio B, she says what's happening is that NATO wasn't just meeting with these people. They were taking some of these groups to Central Asia and to the Balkans to help with destabilization efforts because, you know, one of the questions is geopolitically, is a stable Central Asia in the best interest of outside powers? So she said that people were flown to Turkey on U.S. orders to train and participate in these destabilization operations. There were going to be coordinated false flag efforts, that they were going to steal nuclear weapons secrets. And it's just a dirty game. So
she even reported that some of the hijackers that were, you know, a part of 9/11 were being trained in these facilities.
Ah, yes. Yeah. At least some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an interesting thing that occurs here because a paper of note in the United Kingdom, the Sunday Times, speaks to some anonymous MI6 and Pentagon forces, and they say that the operation of Gladio B is real. It's not just real. It's not past tense. It's currently happening. And apparently there was pressure from outside, and not all of this report was ever published.
Well, yeah, and she ended up going to court.
Right.
Because I was going through some of the official FBI response to their investigations of Sybil Edmonds and just the reports that the FBI put out even internally.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting, man.
Yeah.
And it's so vague because they can't mention a lot of the stuff.
Right, especially considering, and this is something you can see in our video on whistleblowers that aren't Edward Snowden, which came out this past week as we record this. What's interesting is the concept of retroactive classification.
Yeah.
Which would be super handy in a relationship, right? When you break up, retroactively, everything I told you is classified.
Like, oh, well, how are you going to enforce that?
I don't know, man. I guess I better call NATO.
Guess so.
But yeah, I guess that's what you would have to do. Just a quick note, everybody. Noel, if we could have some advice music. That is not and should not be confused with relationship advice. Neither Matt, Noel, Agent Scully, or myself are trained life coaches or relationship experts.
He's right. Now, getting back to Operation Gladio B. I guess we can. Can we go over a couple of these little quotes here?
Sure. Yeah.
Because this is really interesting to me. According to Edmonds, 9/11, the September 11th attacks, they were a Gladio B operation, and she states that the objective of Gladio B is, quote, projecting U.S. power in the former Soviet sphere of influence to access previously untapped strategic energy and mineral reserves for the U.S. and European communities, pushing back Russian and Chinese power, and expanding the scope of lucrative criminal activities, particularly illegal arms and drugs trafficking.
That's a great way to make some side money, you know?
Yeah.
So currently, Sybil Edmonds is not allowed to talk about this stuff. She's under a state secrets privilege or gag orders. The thing that I focused on specifically was looking at her allegations about this activity in Eurasia, because one thing that you and I have found over the course of doing different episodes on this show or on this region is that since the days of empire, way before even the modern era, the great game of who owns Eurasia has continued almost unabated.
Yeah.
You know, like the Mongol empires, China's venturing out into that area. The thing that was called the Great Game between various Western powers in the time, you know, Rudyard Kipling, not the best person, but he has a great book about it called Kim. It's about a boy spy, but it's pretty interesting.
Nice.
I enjoyed it. And it's strange that this continues today. You can also read a book called The Grand Chessboard by a guy named Zbigniew Brzeznetsky, which I cannot believe I pronounced correctly.
Fascinating dude and book.
Yeah, yeah. And what this means is that these destabilization efforts could be plausible, you know? And there has to be something there, because why was stuff retroactively classified?
Right.
Apparently a lot of the stuff that Edmonds originally brought up about this alleged Gladio B was public record, technically, because it was in the congressional record.
The biggest thing for me, Ben, after researching this, is how is if that is true, if that stuff, that information is true, how is she still alive, man? And I don't mean to be too blunt or scary yeah. about it. It just seems that that information, if true, is so
explosive.
I can't even fathom if that stuff was just known.
Right. Yeah, that's the question. But then another question would be, well, would the death of someone who revealed this information be just more confirmation? You know what I mean?
I mean, that it's just scary because people have been dying mysteriously for a long time now. We're connected to things like this.
Sure.
And it's really creepy, man. And I don't understand. Like, she's still writing a lot and well. I was reading some of her stuff today.
Right, yeah. It's strange because this story, which Daniel Ellsberg, who the guy who leaked the Pentagon Papers, he said this was more explosive than the Pentagon Papers.
Wow.
But it's something that a lot of people are not aware of. And then also it's something that a lot of people would say, well, war is an ugly business, and this is part of why it's such an ugly thing, that ultimately these sorts of actions are at the very least less bad than what would happen if they weren't.
Yes,
if they didn't take place.
Argue it's necessary. Ugh, man.
So this is where we have to conclude, because we don't have all the information. We'd love to hear from you. Do you think that Operation Gladio B is real? Or that Operation Gladio continues today? The stuff that was once treated as a conspiracy theory a few decades ago is now largely confirmed. Not all of it, not all of the connections are written out there. And there are people drawing some dotted lines, which might be a leap of logic. But in large part, yeah, it's moved to a conspiracy fact. So what do you think? Do you think that these kind of destabilization efforts continue today? The Great Game, by the way, which we talked about, I think, in our look at Soviet Russia and the UK. The Great Game was about spheres of influence, trade, economy, and resources. And I've been pretty clear with my opinion about this stuff as well. Like, I don't buy the idea of wars for ideology often, or at least wars of invasion or aggression for ideology. I think it's a nice window dressing to put on a resource grab.
I think those have happened in the past, but you have to have a very special person. When I say special, I mean
like a charismatic leader.
Oh, well, a leader that believes in himself and his, I'm going to say, BS enough mm-hmm. that makes it ideological.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like Merlin in King Arthur's court, right?
Sure.
Or Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court. Yeah. Not just the regular Merlin. And also, if you want to write to us and let us know some stuff that we should cover in the future, our best ideas come from you. We'll give you our email at the very end of the show. But first, it's time to do something that we haven't done in a while.
We're going to read a little piece of listener mail. Ben, I'm going to read a quick, or I guess I'm going to read parts of this message we got from Kelsey.
Okay.
Kelsey says, "Hey guys, I was just thinking about the final question you posed at the end of Who Runs the Internet? Dealing with the future of the internet. I watched a YouTube video from Verge, or The Verge,
mm-hmm.
where Bill Gates talks about how the internet and technology is going to help with education in lower income countries." And Kelsey says, "When you combine this with your YouTube videos about historical revisionism and what if the Middle Ages never happened, things start to get interesting." Kelsey says, "Here's where it gets crazy. What if the U.S. government is just helping the third world, quote, to get free internet and education so they could be the ones who are teaching them the way they want to?" That is really interesting. Basically saying that they would sway that part of the world to be more aligned with Western ideology, at least. That's what I would do if I were them in this situation, Kelsey says. Anyways, just an idea. Love the show. Keep up the good work.
Well, thanks, Kelsey. That's a massive compliment, but also that's a great question. You and I, Matt, we did a piece on something similar when we talked about textbooks, which are a huge deal and completely different depending upon where you go in the world, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it's strange because I'm sure that, of course, an Arab textbook will differ widely from an Israeli textbook, just as a Japanese or a Chinese textbook will also differ, especially about World War II and things like Manchuria, right?
Depends on the consensus of, you know, which side you were on when stuff went down.
Yeah, and I think it's completely plausible, Kelsey, that some entity would say, well, let me inculcate a certain type of belief structure by not really showing you any other possibilities, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it's something that would be possible to prove if we could find it. But, you know, this is a battle that takes place within countries, especially in a country like the United States where every state is on some level autonomous, right, with certain things. And we've seen, at least you and I have, Matt, the battles over what should and shouldn't go into a textbook, sex education, evolution, how historical events are portrayed, you know?
Yeah, history of the United States, just overall history during slavery.
Right, yeah, or how nobody teaches – or at least nobody in the South teaches Martin Luther King's other speeches, the ones about class equality, right?
Yeah, you can't do that.
That's a little bit too socialist, I think. I don't know how it is in other states, but that is fantastic food for thought, and we've got to start digging on that.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Kelsey. And everybody else, please write to us. We want to hear from you. All the things we said earlier about your awesome ideas, we love it. And just if you want to write to us, you can do it right now. And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.